three guiding principles and guiding teens on the topic of romance. First, build and model a delightful expectation of marriage. Build and model a delightful expectation of marriage. Proverbs 12:4 says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. Proverbs 18:22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Just two examples of what is overwhelmingly present in the scriptures, that God's intention is that marriage should be seen as a delightfully good thing. Now, I'll get to the fact that I know everybody's thinking of, well, yeah, but there's lots of ways where I haven't done that. Neither have I. I know that's present. But I want us just to begin with God's intention, and that is that marriage is a good thing. It is a gift from God. It is a blessing from God. And before we run quick to all the ways we've distorted that image, we have to start with what God's ideal is, which is that it is a good thing. That means we should prioritize, at the very least, it means we ought to prioritize our marriage and our romance over our kids as a way to serve our kids. We should prioritize our romance and our marriage over our kids as a way to serve our kids. Here's what I mean. It's possible to allow marital neglect to take place because we're focused on our kids and we're trying to serve them. I would contend that actually doesn't serve them in the long run. They will spend more of their life outside of their home than inside of your home. And they'll probably spend way more time married than they will under your roof. So if your model for them is that their focus in their teenage years is themselves, then it's likely that that will be the temptation that they will indulge in their own marriage. And that's not what you want for them. Not only is it wrong to do that because your spouse is actually more important in your life than your kids, because there's only one person that you're one with, and that is your spouse. There's only one person that you display Christ and the church to the world with, and that is your spouse. It's also that it actually serves your kids for there to be a kind of a sacred priority of your marriage and romance, because that actually serves them as a model. Another category here, building and modeling a delightful expectation of marriage. We must teach our kids at age-appropriate levels that marriage is a gift. We must teach them that marriage is a gift. That means that we don't define sexuality as primarily a negative thing to be guarded against, but a gift to be preserved for marriage and then enjoyed for the rest of life. One concern I would have many times for Christian parents is that romance and sexuality is viewed primarily as something that we are really hoping they don't mess up in their teenage years, and that our highest goal for them is that they remain pure during their teenage years. But that really isn't the highest goal as it relates to romance. The highest goal is that they would have a godly and delightful marriage. But sometimes in focusing on what we don't want to happen, we could lose sight of where we want them to head. It'd be similar to saying, what's our main goal on this road trip? Not getting lost. Our main goal is to not get lost. Don't get lost. Don't you dare go the wrong way. Oh, I forgot to tell you, we're going to Disney World. The main goal is where we're getting to, where they're getting to. But if our emphasis is always or mostly or most passionately about what we don't want you to do, they could lose sight of where we want you to get. So in our modeling, in our teaching, in our emphasis, we have to talk about, I'm so excited for your future marriage, for the vast majority of our kids. Perhaps some, very small number normally, are called to singleness, but for the vast majority of them, there is some future spouse that God has called them to. We want them to hear from us, I'm so excited for you, for all elements of that. That's what I'm looking forward to. That's going to be the most impacting decision of your life, the most transforming relationship of your life, the most important platform for you, your glory of God. Is going to be your marriage. And so I'm so excited for that in your future. At a very young age, preteen, and certainly into the teenage years, that should be something that they hear. So that romance isn't primarily this big, negative, scary thing that we're cautioning them about. It's a big, exciting adventure that we're pointing them towards in our model and in our teaching. Now, one note for wherever we're aware, and especially if we're aware of major ways where we haven't done this, we haven't modeled, we haven't taught, I would encourage you, if that's true, if you look at the way you've related to your spouse in front of your kids and you've thought, I'm not sure I've modeled that marriage is a delightful gift from the Lord. Through my sin, through their sin, there's been a lot of times, not just here and there, but a lot of times where either we've made the kids too much of a priority, or we've allowed conflict to indefinitely drive us apart, or they're more aware of the negatives of how we relate to each other. It would be appropriate to go to them and acknowledge that. That actually, I would recommend that. If that's been not just here and there in areas of sin, I'm not saying every single time you struggle. I'm saying if there's been a pattern where when I make that point where you're mostly aware of is failure, there could be a wisdom in going to them and saying, hey, you know what? I don't think we've modeled this for you, but we're purposing to change that direction. And we want you to know that that's not what we want for you. We want you to know that. This isn't what God's good intention is. And we're sinners and we need a savior too, but we want you to know that. Please forgive us for modeling that poorly. That could also be the case if we've allowed our kids' desires and priorities to encroach on the priority of marriage. That could be a helpful conversation to say to them, listen, we've allowed you to intrude into our lives in too regular a way. You've seen us prioritize you in a way that we haven't prioritized each other. That really isn't right, and it really doesn't actually serve you. Husbands, I would encourage us to make it very clear. It should be very clear to our children. I love your mom more than I love you. I love you a lot. But it's very clear in simple and profound ways. I love her more than you. And that might come out in who am I most excited to greet when I get home. It might come out at the end of the day when somebody comes in during a conversation and dad is say, this is time that I'm talking with mom. And that's not a euphemism. I really mean, I'm talking with mom. And we'll talk later. We will talk later. Right now, I'm talking with mom. There needs to be some sense of that. Our delight in each other should exceed even our delight in our kids. That needs to be clear to them, right? Build and model a delightful expectation of marriage. I think that's the first thing we can do in guiding our teens in romance. Second point I wanted to make. Guard them and guide them away from awakening romance before marriage is realistic. Guard and guide them away from awakening romance before marriage is realistic. I don't know any other way to apply at the very least three strong exhortations in the Song of Solomon in which this is what the woman calls the daughters of Jerusalem to consider. I adjure you, she says, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. Same thing in 3:5. Do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. Same thing in 8:4. Do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. In light of the context of that book, the sense is love is such an overwhelmingly delightful and passionate thing. Until it pleases cannot mean whenever I feel like it. I think in the context it means when it is time to give it its full expression, as we've been describing in this book. As we've been describing in this book, with all of its very intense and very intentional passion for each other, do not awaken it until you can enjoy what we've been talking about in this book. Do not awaken love until it pleases. We might put it this way. Do not awaken the desires of love until it can be expressed in a godly way. Does that mean that you never talk about romance during the teenage years? Of course not. Hormones are growing and there's some appropriate conversation. But there's a way to talk about it in a way that is looking to the future. And there's a way to talk about it that acts like we should be indulging and cultivating these desires in the present. The expectation of both what the Bible describes and what I think our own experience reveals is that love is not meant to be this thing that is cultivated and then held back, cultivated and then held back, cultivated and then held back. It's meant to be restrained and paused until that season of life when it can be fully embraced and indulged. anticipated in the sense of acceleration and desire and fulfillment. That's the way God made love to be. And that's a very good thing, because for most of our children and for most of their life, love should not be this thing that it takes a mammoth amount of effort to arouse. That would be horrible for married couples, that this is this thing that it just takes an incredible amount of work to love you again. That's not the way it's made to be. But because of that, in the season when they are not able to fulfill a marriage, there needs to be a caution, a guarding that looks to the future, a guarding that looks to the moment when it can be fully enjoyed. Romance, according to the scriptures, is for marriage. There, you cannot get from the scriptures. If you start from what the Bible teaches, God made marriage and he made romance as a gift for marriage. He didn't make two different categories, romance and marriage, that sometimes overlap. He made marriage and he made romance with all of its attraction and everything else as a gift for marriage. Now, if that's true, biblically true, then whatever we do in cultivating romance, encouraging conversation about it, speculating about who might be a future spouse, encouraging attraction and attractional conversations, we have to be very careful that that's headed toward marriage and not indulged as an independent destination. And if we would look at a young man or a young woman and say, I can't even remotely imagine them in the near future as a husband or a wife, as a father or a mother. If we would look at them and say, nothing in their life indicates they're ready for that, except that they like the opposite sex and they'd like to be romantic towards them. Well, don't awaken that until it can be indulged. And I'm not setting a time amount on that so much as I'm saying it ought to be that marriage is within sight. It ought to be that we're not cultivating something that has to be held back for years and years because there's not readiness otherwise. I would recommend create an ongoing conversation with your teens where attraction can be discussed, but do what you can to keep it from being a major theme in their life. I would not recommend in the teen years that romance is a major theme. And even parents at times can indulge in this. It becomes a fun major theme. Who do you like? You know, it's this major ongoing conversation. I would also not recommend, this isn't a biblical mandate, it's just my perspective. I would not recommend that teen friends regularly make attractions a topic of accountability and conversation. I would not recommend that. Because this is one of those moments where mutual temptation is reinforcing each other, as opposed to wisdom in a different season of life is bringing restraint and an older, wiser perspective. Just talking about attractions can be literally titillating for a teen, because it's exciting, because they know and their friend know the fulfillment of that is forbidden and it's in the future. So there is a sense in which we can, I think, be wildly overestimate the maturity of teenage friendships. That's where one of my underlying points is, teenage friendships needs parental guidance. They need, it's not that they can't keep themselves accountable for anything, but I wouldn't applaud and encourage, no, talk to each other about who you like and hold each other accountable. And there has to be training in how to fellowship and what that looks like, lest it just become a subtle form of romantic gossip. I would recommend conversation with parents for sure, and perhaps guided conversations, but not just a kind of a indulged conversation. You know, go tell your friends. And I would highly recommend that the assumption is that they are talking about this. That is the assumption. I wouldn't assume they're not talking about this. I would assume they are, and that in talking about it, there is a level, a degree of immaturity in their understanding, in their biblical perspective, in the kind of counsel they can give. If you look at the average 14, 15, 16-year-old, something in that range, and you say, would this person have a breadth of biblical wisdom and experience that they could bring to bear in most areas of life? Almost always, the answer to that question is no. They don't have a breadth of biblical wisdom. They've perhaps learned some maturity in some ways if they're doing pretty well. But they're not going to be able to carry a whole breadth of biblical wisdom and drop it into a conversation with a friend fraught with other temptations and so forth. So I would recommend that this not be a major topic of accountability and conversation. So the overall point is guard teens and guide them away from awakening romance before marriage is realistic. Finally, point number three, encourage teens to use their single years to grow in godliness and faithfulness. Encourage teens to use their single years to grow in godliness and faithfulness. The single years are not for faux marriage without benefits, but they can be used to accelerate preparation for marriage and preparedness for marriage. I find it ironic that many teens spend much of their teenage years thinking about romantic possibilities that they can't do anything with, such that when they get to an age where, hypothetically, they could be getting married, they're not actually ready, because so much of their time has been spent thinking about what they couldn't indulge, so when the time comes, they're still not ready. It'd be much better to spend that time thinking about topics like faithfulness and godliness and truthful speech and encouragement and self-control and guarding their thoughts, so that when the moment comes that perhaps life has led them to a moment where they are ready, they've used that time well. So I would strongly discourage a kind of faux marriage. Well, we have these kind of relationships. They can't ever go anywhere in any kind of significant way, but we spend a lot of time and energy thinking about them and being careful in them and talking about them and watching over them. And I have to confess this to my parents, and years of going in that merry-go-round where that's using up a lot of single years. I would encourage that you be cautious against that. What does it mean to prepare them to grow in godliness and faithfulness? It means encouraging boys to grow in those qualities that will make them courageous providers and leaders. If you have a teen who says, "I really like girls and I really want to get married," great. I would applaud that. That's wonderful. Here's what that means. You're going to have to be able to provide for a family, and you're going to have to lead without fear. Can you do that? Are you dependable? I will do everything I can to make you that way as quickly as possible. But we're not going to try you out on a girl. You've got to prove that first. So we're going to work hard. We're going to try hard to do that work. Also, encourage girls to grow in those qualities that will make them supporting and encouraging wives and nurturing mothers. If you see in your teen, and I pray all teens, most of them have this desire, there's a growing romantic, the response of the parents should be, you know how this is going to be fulfilled? One day you're getting married. Here's what that means, though. Here's what that means. You've got to work on some qualities so that when the right person comes along, you and I can both say, oh, she is so ready. She is so ready. She's cultivated a nurturing disposition, an encouraging disposition. She's able to support. She's able to manage. She's able to be wise and godly in so many different circumstances. She is so ready. She is ready for you. She is ready. The contrast is a teenage boy or girl who thinks of their adolescence as primarily a season to indulge without responsibility. The teenage years are primarily a season for preparation, not indulgence without responsibility. Everything in their, you know, growing independence, and certainly everything in the world says, indulge without responsibility, and then eventually you can have responsibility. What the scripture says is, learn to be faithful, and then, because you can take responsibility, you can have freedom. We have to work hard to reverse that tendency in their thinking. Man, I'm 16, I want to have fun. No, the scripture says that, at least sexually speaking, and in this category, you're meant to have fun for 50 years. 50 years of fun comes from 5 years of hard work, roughly. 5 to 10 years of hard work, and you can enjoy 50 years of fun. That's the right way to think. I remember having a conversation, this is a number of years ago, on this topic, and trying to impress on an individual, look, if you, I get it, sounds like everybody's saying, oh, be careful, oh, be careful, oh, be careful. But what we're really saying is, if you could just have self-control, and I would add to that, cultivate discipline, cultivate faithfulness, cultivate godliness. For a few years, we're not, it's not like we're saying, well, just be bored for 50 years, and at the end, you get a 5-year bonus. No, no, we're saying the opposite of that. You'll start to have these awakened desires, what, roughly 12, 13, 14 especially? Then, if you work really hard for 5, 6, 7 years, you can begin, especially if you're a young man, you can begin the task, because you prepared yourself, of pursuing. Because you're roughly at a time where you, if you've worked hard, you're largely prepared. On the other hand, if you spend 5, 6, 7 years indulging, you're gonna get to the time where your age is ready, but your character is not. And then you're gonna have to wait another 5, 6, 7 years for a character you should have been preparing during those teenage years. And that's gonna be a real bummer, because we all want you to be able to enjoy as long as possible in the goal that God has for you. So it takes, I think, parents, like all things, helping them see the long road. Trust me, if you can just be patient now, be faithful now, grow now, cultivate now, make yourself into somebody, if you're a young man, that a father would see as a great husband and dad in a young form. If you're a young lady, make yourself into somebody that a godly young man would see as someone he would trust with his children. Make yourself into that, so that when the time comes, everybody can say, oh, they're ready. Go for it. I think that takes very courageous parental guidance. It takes conversations. It takes modeling. It takes self-control, even on the parental side. It takes viewing this as a sacred and magnificent gift, not an adolescent indulgence. Some of it is we have to raise our view of what marriage is. It is a sacred and magnificent gift, full of magnificent privileges. So magnificent that it is not to be miniaturized in kind of faux indulgence prematurely. It's meant to be prepared for. It's meant to be anticipated. It's meant to be worked towards so that it can be enjoyed as soon as possible. I think if we can do those things, if we can build and model, if we can guard against awakening romance too early, and if we can encourage them to use your single years in godliness and faithfulness, I think we're doing everything we can do. The Lord has to change their hearts and so forth. But we're trying to push them in the direction where, as soon as possible, they can embark on that sacred and magnificent adventure together.